Hello, it's Tuesday 9th of June. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauerman from Check In Asia.
Today, we're dedicating the entire show to another of Southeast Asia's most talked about destinations, Cambodia.
Yeah, our last podcast asked when will Vietnam reopen to international tourism? And this week, we are asking the same of another extremely low COVID case country, Cambodia. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, Cambodia is just emerging from the pandemic crisis with life getting back to normal. Country has had just 126 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and zero deaths, and actually had a six-week streak in April and May without a single reported new infection.
Yeah, and that six-week COVID-free run was only ended, actually, when two Cambodians returned from overseas and they tested positive. But nevertheless, Cambodia's total number of cases is the second lowest in ASEAN, with only Lao PDR counting less. And, Hannah, if you think, last week we spoke about Vietnam, I think the number of cases in Cambodia is about a third of those in Vietnam. So given its relatively COVID-safe status, should we be talking more about Cambodian travel, and when will it properly open up to international travel? At present, foreign travellers can enter the country, but there is a 14-day quarantine period, and there obviously aren't many flights either. You also have to take a COVID test at the airport. So when will it actually properly open up?
That is a great question, and we'll come back to this. So this week's Cambodia-centric show, it follows on from a webinar that Gary and I co-hosted last week with Natasha Martin from Good Travel, based in Phnom Penh, and it's called Attracting Short-Haul Asian Markets to Cambodia.
Yeah, it was great fun. The webinar attracted travel industry attendees from across Cambodia, as well as from Thailand, Myanmar, and Lao PDR. It ran for an hour. Actually, it overran, didn't it? It was about an hour and 10 minutes because we had so many questions. We covered various key factors influencing travel to Cambodia from key markets, particularly from Southeast Asia and China. We also suggested some creative sales and marketing tactics and some guest service innovations. And we analyzed consumer sentiment and booking trends. Then finishing up, we also took a bit of a leap of faith to forecast some of the challenges and opportunities for 2021 and that hoped for spring comeback.
We did. So as usual, before we get into the challenges and opportunities for Cambodia's travel sector now, let's do what we normally do. And that's take a few steps back.
Yeah, so let's look back at 2019, just before, obviously, the COVID outbreak started. And Cambodia had a record 6.7 million inbound arrivals last year. Now, that represented about 8.7% growth on the previous year. And Cambodia was looking for 7 million tourists this year in 2020. But obviously, that looks a bit of a forlorn hope right now. The key markets, well, obviously China. China was 2.36 million arrivals. That accounted for 35.7% of all visitors to Cambodia last year. Staggering, huh? In second place was Vietnam, with around 900,000 arrivals to Cambodia last year. And that represented 13.7% of the total market. So if you take those top two countries, China and Vietnam, that's almost half of total inbound arrivals last year. Other big markets from Southeast Asia were Thailand, which was placed third with about 466,000 visitors. Lao PDR was fourth with 364,000. And Malaysia was down in eighth with 203,000.
They were. So looking a little bit more at Southeast Asia, it's actually quite well connected overall to Cambodia, which you would expect, but it's not always the case in Southeast Asia, as we've talked about before. You know, connectivity is not always there. But if you were looking at somewhere like Vietnam, which is the second biggest source market, like you were just saying, you've got direct flights between Da Nang, Ho Chi Minh City, and Hanoi to Siem Reap, to Phnom Penh, even to Sihanoukville. Thailand has links from Bangkok to all the main kind of tourist destinations, Siem Reap, Phnom Penh, Sihanoukville. Lao is a little bit more limited, but it's got a big land border. So you have traffic going between Luang Prabang and Siem Reap, Vientiane and Phnom Penh. Malaysia, of course, we've got Asia here, so we've got connections from KL to all the main points. And Singapore. And Singapore is a surprising one, actually, because it is only the 14th biggest source market to Cambodia. It only accounted for 1% of travellers to Cambodia in 2018, which is I guess, a bit of a shame for Cambodia. It's Singaporean travellers who tend to be more affluent, tend to spend quite a bit when they're travelling. And they only have direct flights, surprisingly, right, to Siem Reap and Phnom Penh. No direct connections to Sihanoukville.
So we actually took a bit of a look at the ASEAN market, didn't we? We analysed how Cambodia's number of visitors from the other nine countries of Southeast Asia compared to other countries in the region. So if you take the ASEAN region as a whole, 10 countries, last year, 2019, there were 133 million arrivals. Now, of that 133 million, 36.7% was intra-ASEAN. So it was arrivals from ASEAN countries to other ASEAN countries. So 36.7%, that's kind of your baseline figure. For Cambodia last year, they almost hit that figure. They almost hit that baseline median. It was 33.7% of their visitors came from ASEAN countries, which compares pretty well to other countries in the region. I mean, if you compare Thailand, for example, only 9.2% of its visitors last year came from other Southeast Asian nations. Now that obviously... It is surprising, but it's obviously because I think over 40% of their visitors were from China. They also had a high number of visitors from Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. But, you know, less than 10% of visitors from other Southeast Asian countries. That's very surprising. So if we also look at, you've looked through there, Hannah, at the some of the Southeast Asian markets. We also covered China, didn't we? We looked at how Chinese travelers are booming in the region, or they were up until the end of 2019. And we looked at the visitors from China into the countries of mainland Southeast Asia. So Thailand tops that market. There were 10.99 million Chinese visitors to Thailand last year. In Vietnam, that figure was 5.8 million. Singapore, 3.6 million. Malaysia, 3.1 million. And Cambodia had 2.36 million visitors from China, which represented quite strong growth. But obviously, there's a window there for even further growth in future. The two other countries in mainland Southeast Asia, Laos PDR, had just over 1 million for the first time visitors from China. But Myanmar, 750,000, that represented a whopping 152% growth from the previous year. So the connectivity for Chinese travelers into Cambodia is pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. It's becoming such a popular place for Chinese to visit that, you know, I'm sure that the air links after this little bump of a pandemic is over, we'll start to ramp up the volume again.
So the connectivity from China into Cambodia is pretty good. If you look at the three main airports in Cambodia, Phnom Penh is linked to 20 cities in mainland China. Siem Reap to 22 mainland cities. Sihanoukville is linked to 18 mainland Chinese cities. And they spread across China. So you have obviously the three primary airport centers of Guangzhou, Beijing, and Shanghai, but also second and third tier cities where outbound travel from China has been growing faster in the last few years. Now, those factors could be boosted in future. Sihanoukville Airport, which does attract a lot of Chinese travelers to that part of the country, has a master plan for the next 30 years. So they're going to be developing that at a huge speed, I think almost double the capacity of the airport. And Siem Reap is also building a brand new international airport. I think that's going to open in about 3 years' time. So there'll be more capacity there. Let's hope the demand is there as well. But, you know, you'd imagine that more Chinese airlines would, in an ordinary situation, be introducing more flights from different cities and greater frequencies as well.
It is. And that kind of brings us nicely to what else we were talking about during our webinar, which is what we think travellers, from Southeast Asia and from China are going to want for their holidays post-pandemic. So obviously, you know, COVID safe will be the big driver, but we were also talking, weren't we, Gary, about things like shorter booking windows, the fact that there's probably going to be quite a high cancellation rate, so you're going to need to see flexible cancellation policies, people wanting to take shorter trips. And we think, I think a lot of other experts are kind of saying the same kind of thing, that we're not going to see the big group tours that we've seen before. It's going to be more couples and families. And I think certainly Cambodia has come out and said that they're looking into these zero fare Chinese group tours, and that's something that they're going to re-examine post-pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we were saying, obviously, Han, you know, it does have that sort of COVID safety appeal for travellers, particularly for short-haul travellers, which we do think, you know, once this domestic interim phase that we're in at the moment, it's going to be all about neighbouring countries and short-haul markets.
Yeah, exactly. The happy thing for Cambodia, I suppose, is that it shares a lot of overland borders with many different Southeast Asian countries. And that, you know, will make things like overland trips much more of a possibility, you know, cross-border weekend trips, rather than necessarily having to get on a plane. But where, you know, we'll also see Cambodia kind of benefiting is because they are linked. You know, you just saw that they've got so many links across Southeast Asia to, you know, southern, well, across China, but particularly to southern cities in China as well, which means that it's a perfect destination for people who are looking to book just short flights. And we do think that initially it will be, you know, shorter flights that people will want to take, especially for those first, second kind of trips. Travelers are going to feel quite wary about wanting to take, you know, a 6-7 hour flight where maybe they have to wear a face mask the whole time. They're looking for those, you know, sweet spot 1.5 to 3 hours, get away, go somewhere completely different.
Yeah. And just going back to your point there about narrow booking windows and high cancellation rates, Hannah, I think OAG's figures for, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, suggested that in domestic travel in China right now, 72% of flight bookings are made no more than 4 days out before travel. And the actual cancellation rate of flights is somewhere around 9%, which is really high. I think the industry average is around about 1%. But I think that actually shows that also the airlines are juggling their capacities, trying to work out, you know, what the optimum levels are at the moment. So that gives travelers more opportunities, well, not opportunities, that gives them more chance to rebook and cancel their flights and as they need to.
Yeah. I mean, another trend that we were talking about as well last week was affordability. And so many countries throughout the world, but in Southeast Asia as well, have been really, really hard hit by COVID, not just, you know, the tourism sector, but all sectors in general. And that has that knock-on effect that people have a lot less disposable income. And therefore, when they are looking for a trip, then they're looking to spend less. And I think Cambodia might have an advantage here, I think, over some other Southeast Asian nations, in that it's, you know, a really competitive place to go take a vacation. And being able to book services on a private basis is not prohibitively expensive either. And I think that is something that people are going to be looking for, aren't they? They're going to be looking for that kind of private experience where they're not mingling around with lots of other people.
You notice this sense of concern, you know, this economic concern. I just notice it here in Kuala Lumpur. Pretty much everybody I talk to, you know, whether it's Grab drivers, cafe owners, restaurateurs or whatever, you know, everybody is talking that they feel unsecure about their jobs, their futures, the futures of their families at the moment. And that sentiment is lingering. So you can see that most of the shops, and we've been unlocked here for probably about a month now, a lot of the shops are open, but, you know, a lot of them are really empty, apart from supermarkets. So it does look at the moment as though, you know, essential purchases is definitely the priority right now. How that reflects into travel going forward, you know, we're only going to have the opportunity here in Malaysia to travel domestically for probably the next month or two, probably. Malaysian outbound travel to Cambodia is not going to pick up yet. So, you know, the sentiment may have changed in a couple of months' time. But right now, you know, I don't think the bookings would be particularly high from this country.
No, I mean, it's until they figure out travel restrictions and everything else, won't they? So that's the biggest kind of hurdle that we all have to face. But there was an interesting Google survey about customer sentiment that was released a few weeks ago. And it touches on price as well. So it asked people, you know, what would make you more likely to book a flight, more likely to book a hotel in the next 3 months? And the majority of people, you know, and there were options given, like things like cancellation fees or about hygiene. The majority of countries, so Malaysia, Vietnam, Philippines, all chose the discounting. They all said a 25% discount on a standard fare would make us more likely to book, rather than necessarily having this kind of hospital grade cleaning or even cancellation policies. So that was quite interesting and kind of reinforced, I guess, the fact that people are going to be looking for affordability. Despite, you know, all of this buzz saying maybe people will be willing to pay more for hygiene, I'm not sure they will.
No, I really don't see that. Not in this region. I mean, we've said this before on the pod, haven't we, Hannah? It's a very price-sensitive region. People want value. They're prepared and they're very happy to travel, but they do want good value for it. I don't buy that idea that they will pay extra for hygiene. I really don't.
So other trends we were talking about for Southeast Asian travellers and Chinese travellers is we think they'll be looking for less crowded destinations. And so we're talking nature, we're talking off the beaten track, we're talking going to the seaside and having the coastal breezes, or going to the mountains with the fresh air. But the one thing that Cambodia might not necessarily struggle with, but they've certainly got to think about how they will handle that is, you know, UNESCO World Heritage Site. So obviously they have Angkor Wat. And this is, you know, the must-see, must-do site when you're in Cambodia. How are tour operators, how is Angkor Wat itself going to handle that for tourists? Are tourists still even going to want to go visit this because they're going to be afraid of running into lots of other tourists?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. And, you know, the other issue that we've said is, you know, people are going to want to get off track. They are going to want to perhaps take a car and go and spend some time in the fresh air, maybe stay at a resort. But, you know, Cambodia is not a small country. And if you only got short trips, there's only so much that you can do. And so Siem Reap, Angkor Wat is a high priority. But I agree with you. I mean, we've both been there when it's absolutely rammed. And, you know, you're really sort of like face to nose to other people, especially the primary sort of historic attraction. So yeah, how they manage that will be very key.
Yeah, how did they manage? Do you know how they managed that in Beijing, Gary, with things like the Great Wall?
well, it's a bit like Angkor Wat. There are only certain parts that most people go to. There are off track areas, but they're less popular. They're less easy to get to, and people tend to go to the main sites. You know, you were supposed to pre-book a reservation to travel there. But, you know, you look at some of the pictures and areas were pretty crowded. You know, I think there's that idea within China at the moment that they've beaten the virus. So if you travel domestically within China, you know, you're going to be safe. But for Chinese travelers going outbound to somewhere, even a destination like Cambodia that, you know, has been very successful in suppressing the virus, you know, you are going to be close to other people from other countries and who have been less successful in dealing with the virus. So these whole issues are going to come up in the coming months once travel becomes available again. If, you know, how are people actually going to feel safe and comfortable? And, you know, we're not really going to know until it actually happens, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're right that China's now in a kind of different stage, isn't it? Where they're pretty confident, everybody is COVID-free, so they feel a bit more relaxed. You know, even in Vietnam, you don't have to do social distancing anymore. How is that going to work when you reintroduce foreigners into the mix again?
Yeah, New Zealand actually said that it had beaten the virus, that it was COVID-free, and now obviously wants to introduce, needs to boost its economy again. Tourism is a big part of that. How does it do that? How does it introduce in a phased way to keep everybody safe, visitors, locals, local residents, people who run businesses that come into contact with tourists, airport staff, health systems? You know, we've said this before on the pod, getting out of lockdowns is going to be incredibly hard. And tourists themselves, I think, are going to be wary about how they manage this. And so, it's going to be very tricky for all destinations to find that sort of equilibrium point. And I think, you know, domestic travel for the foreseeable future is going to be how people reintroduce themselves into that rhythm of travel, of learning how to feel safe once they're outside of their home. You know, everybody's been locked down for so long. So leading on from that point, you know, we looked at this hygiene level and, you know, how important is this, particularly in hotels? You know, I've been reading over the last few days that some hoteliers believe that, you know, this hyper-hygienic protocols that they're having to put in place could be a touch of overkill, because maybe to begin with, that's what consumers are going to want. They're going to want quarantined rooms where they don't stay, where nobody else has stayed in them for 24 hours. But as this goes forward, as people start traveling again, is that A, realistic? Is it feasible? And will people actually want that? Will they just get back into, you know, their natural rhythms of traveling? Now, in China, that sort of a buzz phrase during the May holiday was no touch, low touch, and high touch. So that's how a hotel can grade its facilities for those that are totally frictionless, those that have a low element of touch, and then the sort of red zone areas where a lot of people, particularly lifts and things like that, elevators, people are moving in and out of them. You know, that's I thought that was quite a nice phrase to grade. But then again, what about the hotel and tour operator staff themselves? Will they have to wear PPE? Will they have to wear masks? Will they have to be visibly showing sanitary and hygiene measures when you're out on a tour? You know, not just in a hotel. How do you manage that? And then you come down to elements like the healthcare apps. You know, the Chinese healthcare app is very advanced compared to most other countries. It has a lot of functionality. But is it going to be interoperable? Are you going to be able to use that in Cambodia or Vietnam or Malaysia? So if you can't, you know, will that mean that the Chinese travelers feel less safe? We have our own app here, don't we, Hannah? To get into a lot of places, you have to QR code your way in and out. But again, you know, will that work in other countries? There doesn't seem to be any guarantees that it would right now. So I guess the two areas where, you know, there's going to be a lot of focus for hotels, I guess, is their laundry and their dry cleaning services. Travelers are going to be showering more. They're going to want to wash their clothes more regularly, I suspect. And also tour operators, I think, will have to upgrade their health and medical care kits just to make sure that their customers feel safer. So from that, we looked at, you know, how can tour operators actually start to promote some of their services? You know, if travelers are starting to come back, even if it's some sort of drip feed way, you know, what are some of the marketing ideas that they could use? Now, we think that this sort of homestay away from home, a sort of staycation beyond border is the kind of thematic way that you can promote your services. You know, that sort of escape from reality, escape from my life. There's been a lot of missed celebrations. A lot of people have been locked down where they have birthdays, anniversaries, things like that. And I think there will be a sort of retreat to romance as well, especially for couples. They'll want to get away and spend some time together in a new destination.
Yeah, I mean, even those couples who perhaps got married and didn't get the chance to go on honeymoon, even, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And people that are planning their weddings for next year, you know, how are they going to manage those? Where's their honeymoon going to be? Is it going to be a COVID-safe honeymoon? So we'll move on to Hannah. We got asked a few questions at the end of the seminar, didn't we? And we provided some answers to those. Now, the first one I thought was really, really good, and it made a comparison with Vietnam. So the question was, Vietnam gets a lot of positive media coverage for how it has handled the pandemic, but Cambodia has also done very well. So how can tour operators and travel businesses promote tourism in Cambodia more effectively?
Yeah, I mean, that was a really interesting one, isn't it? Because it's true, you know, there's been so much buzz about Vietnam. I've seen so many articles going around the past couple of weeks, you know, Vietnam's success story and how this nation beat COVID and everything else, but not very much about Cambodia, which, as you said, Gary, has only had about a third of the number of cases of Vietnam. I mean, and perhaps some of that is down to people being a bit suspicious. You know, I've definitely seen a lot of people questioning, are the case numbers true? I mean, to all intents and purposes, they seem to be, you know, people from, I think, WHO have come out recently and said, yes, we believe that these numbers are legit. But there still seems to be that kind of question mark around its legitimacy. And I think Cambodia itself has not pushed that. You know, Vietnam has most definitely got its PR wheels into motion, right? Promoting everything that it's doing about COVID, and it's gone all out. You know, they had, did you read, Gary, they've been really trying to rescue and save the life of this British pilot, I think, to make sure that they have zero deaths. And they went all out to save him, and they did. But that's the kind of steps that they're taking, I guess, because they see if they're doing that, they're going to be seen in a really positive light.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think Vietnam has used its media very, very well. Vietnam Tourism has used its media very, very well. A lot of those stories have got picked up internationally. So they've probably been a bit stronger on that level than Cambodia. I also think that the Vietnam Tourism Board website is excellent. I mean, it has some great dynamic content on there. It gets promoted quite a lot. There's new content being uploaded quite regularly. So that creates its own stories as well in this kind of time where the media is looking for these kinds of angles to promote the future of tourism. You know, that kind of proactivity and, you know, as you said, that sort of PR element to travel is coming into its own right now.
No, it is. I mean, and you see even people like TAT who seem to be releasing a press release every single day about another initiative that they are up to. You know, when Cambodia is facing competition like that, Tourism Association and other tourism companies within the industry need to kind of step up their game and publicise what they are doing as well to fight COVID, and the fact that they're proud that it's a COVID-free, or a largely COVID-free country.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Hannah. You know, that they're not Vietnam has not really pushed the sort of COVID safe element too strongly in tourism. It's promoting positive angles of tourism, the stuff that you can do, the stuff that you can get out and about in nature. I think they've been quite effective at that.
Yeah, and I think one thing you said, Gary, last week as well, is now that domestic tourism is back open, it will actually be interesting to see what kind of ideas are picked up, you know, just on Instagram or in other places, where they will see perhaps places that locals are going to within Cambodia that have not had so much mainstream publicity, you know, whether that's a beautiful waterfall or a jungle trek or something, and that might just capture the imagination and spark it. So I think that the tourism board needs to be kind of on the alert for those kind of opportunities as well.
Yeah, I agree. So the next question that we were asked, this one was more towards your experience than mine, Hannah. One of the challenges for tour operators in Cambodia is in building B2B relationships with outbound operators from Southeast Asia and China. So what recommendations do you have to help?
Yeah, I mean, this one is very much from my own personal experience, because one of the things that I do is also represent tour operators throughout Southeast Asia. So it's a lot of putting the hours in, I would say, which is what everybody has right now anyway. And it's going and tracking down the travel agency associations. So in Malaysia, that's MATA. In Singapore, that's NATAS. In Thailand, that could be ATA or TTAA. And from there, looking at the list of members, and then just doing some homework on them, actually, and researching them and trying to figure out who the big ones are. And through that, kind of making that initial kind of list of target travel agents or you know, outbound tour operators in those countries, and then reaching out and trying to make contact to them. A new event that's coming up quite soon is the PATA Dream to Future event, which also seems to be like it will have a platform for this kind of travel mart online interactions. So that would be a good place to go as well. But at the minute, yeah, it's tough without that face-to-face contact, without those in-person travel marts, for sure.
And there was one point that I added about China, is that, you know, there's this perception quite often that it's quite difficult to make those B2B relationships, because, you know, in China, the whole travel chain tends to be controlled to a large degree by Chinese companies, both from the booking end right through to the delivery end. So that really kind of segments how you're looking at China, because are we going to see these big groups that you'd need the B2B relationships for coming from China, or are you going to be focusing much more on independent travelers? And if you can be focusing much more on independent travelers, you've got to find ways of marketing, you know, person to person. You've got to be using your digital, your video content, your own sort of publishing capabilities to create your own content that is relevant to both to Chinese travelers and to the new era that we're moving into. So there is an element there of, well, how do you actually tap into the Chinese travel market? And that's a whole other issue. And that was one of the questions we also got asked.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, quite different to tapping into Southeast Asian independent travelers, but still possible, right, Gary?
It is still possible. You know, if I was a WeChat marketing agency, and there's a lot of them in China, I'd be telling you to buy a big package from me so that I can market you on WeChat. But the problem with WeChat or even Weibo is they're just so saturated. There's so much content on there, especially from the big providers, the big airlines, the big hotel groups, you know, the big cruise lines. There's so much travel information, and to cut through is quite difficult. So, you know, you would probably want to be using the short video platform. You know, the other argument that I make is that if you've got independent travelers from China coming to Cambodia, you know, they want to be sourcing their information locally. They want to find out who the best Cambodian tour operators and travel experience providers are. So they will find you if you produce good enough content. You know, they do research their trips incredibly in such an incredibly detailed way. And they're looking for niche stuff, you know, things that give them an insider view into a country. If you're good enough, they will find you.
I like that. I think, what did you call it? Content, become your own publisher. Was that content publishers?
Yeah, becoming your own content publisher. And I got asked, well, what does that mean? I said, well, basically, you turn your own website into a sort of mini CNN, where you create your own stories, you create your own video content, your own narratives. You know, all of this has to be very, very story-based, narrative-driven. And also appealing to this new era that we're moving into. So don't use videos that you had from before. You've got to produce new content. And also have people in them. Don't just use these drone images that, you know, go on and on and on of overview landscapes. So that doesn't work. People want to put themselves into the experience. So you need to show that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. And I mean, it's super relevant, I think, for Southeast Asian travelers as well as Chinese travelers, right? I think all travelers nowadays are looking for that.
Yeah. And then the final question we got, which is a good one. Somebody asked us that. They said, well, we've been talking quite a lot about leisure travel, but both Siem Reap and Phnom Penh receive a lot of MICE groups from Southeast Asian markets. So what do you think is the future of MICE travel in the region and for Cambodia in particular?
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I've got quite a gloomy view of it, at least I think for the rest of 2020, in that I think still there's this reticence that companies might not want to be sending their employees out to meetings if they're not sure of the safety of that country, or if there's even the potential that their employee could come to harm. And I was just watching a webinar this morning with Dr. Mario Hardy from PATA, and he raised a point that, you know, I'd not really heard anywhere else, which is about travel insurance, and that even getting travel insurance to be valid for no matter what, because it's during this pandemic period, is actually really, really difficult. So until you have the insurance in place, companies are not going to want to be able to send, you know, their employees out to different countries. But ultimately, you know, it's going to rebound. People still want to do business with other people face to face. There's only so much you can do over a Zoom conversation. So it is going to rebound, but I think it will be a little bit slower. And I doubt that, you know, at least in the next 6 months or so, we're going to see such massive conferences that previously we've seen. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's going to be a very slow and phased growth. And I'm not even sure that we'll get back to the MICE levels that we had last year, even in the next 2 or 3 years. You know, that's bad news for the hotels. A lot of the big city hotels were built with huge ballrooms and function facilities, you know, specifically to bring in a lot of MICE revenue. The two areas that I do think will start to move perhaps later in this year, I think trade shows will come back. I think trade shows are essential to so many different industries. They'll probably be pared down. They may be different to they were before. But I think we will start to see some trade shows coming back. And I think the other area that perhaps maybe in a smaller version is these sales incentives trips. You know, economies are going to be struggling. Companies are going to be struggling. And they need to find ways to incentivize their top staff to basically produce out of their skin, to, you know, to produce performances that they wouldn't have done in a normal year. So I think there's going to need to be some sort of sales incentive trips. Now, some of these may be domestic. There may not be too many overseas trips this year, perhaps, hopefully into spring next year. But I do see that the incentives market has a future there. But I agree that the big galas, the big conventions and the big meetings, even if they're hosted, I think, you know, the visitor numbers will be way, way down.
Well, that brings us almost to the end of this special Cambodia edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Yeah, and with Cambodia being a potential rising star in the travel sphere, we'd love to hear your comments and feedback on this episode. So please send us a note by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or on our Facebook page, The SEA Travel Show, or on Twitter, SEA Travel Show.
Also, look out for our daily travel and tourism updates on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Our reader numbers are rising quite quickly on there, which is great. And of course, you can listen to all of our previous podcast episodes on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's podcast. We're both off to start searching for future flights to Cambodia, so we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism again very soon.
Bye.